This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
My name is Bria, and I am here at Joy on Paper Radio, filling in for Patsy Gill. And today we have a very special show. It is a science fiction-themed show with two incredible authors, G.S. Jensen and Alan Dean Foster. So my very first guest, G.S. Jensen, will be on in just a moment. We're going to start with the Science Fiction Book Buzz review that I got the privilege of doing for her wonderful book, Medusa Falling. Big Ed, thank you so much for having me here in the studio with you. Would you go ahead and play that book buzz?
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2023 space opera, Medusa Falling by G.S. Jensen, with stellar narration by Piper Down. This Cosmic Shores novel is a standalone adventure set in the Amaranth universe. Now, let's download the book buzz. Ambassador Marley Morano steps out of her own world through a wormhole portal, leaving Concord behind and entering the alien planet Bellaria, smacking headlong into the scene of a murder. First contact with the alien race known as Belliscosians should have been a diplomatic meet and greet, not an event that turned Marley into the witness of a crime. The evident murderer, a Belliscosian named Galian, kidnaps Marley and brings her to the secret rebel base of the Tarazi, a group protecting the Desbida, victims of a shadow government that the rest of the world believes is nothing more than a theory. One of the Desbida shares the truth of her story with Marley, who realizes she's misunderstood nearly everything she'd witnessed. But the Tarazi don't trust her to keep their secrets from her own government on Concord, and they block her quantum communications, which means the rising tensions between the two planets could escalate into all-out war. Marley will do whatever it takes to keep that from happening, even if it means risking her own life for her new friends. This espionage space opera mashup launches readers into a page-turning adventure that's sure to please with a little subterfuge on the side. G.S. Jensen, an internationally best-selling author since her first novel, Starshine, was published in 2014, is a gypsy at heart. When she isn't writing, she's gaming or working out, or she's sitting on her back porch with a glass of wine looking up at the stars, trying to figure out what could be up there. This is Bria Burton with your Futuristic Fiction Fix, signing off.
Now that you've heard a little bit behind the book, let's talk to G.S. Jensen. Hello, G.S., and welcome to the show.
Hi, Bria. Thank you so much for having me today.
I am thrilled to be chatting with you, and after reading your book, I can't wait to read more in the Amaranthi universe. And am I saying that correctly? It's Amaranthi?
Yes, absolutely. The E at the end, you can sort of hint at or pronounce or not pronounce at all, you know, whatever your preference.
Okay, awesome. And so this book, Medusa Falling, is a standalone, but there is a whole series that people can dive into if they want to just digest book after book after book. Tell us a little bit what led you, because this is your most recent release, correct, Medusa Falling?
Yes.
What led you to step outside of the series that you were in to do a standalone?
Well, the most recent series within the Amaranth universe was a six-book, epic, huge space opera series that, you know, all of the books before it had led up to it, and, you know, universe-threatening, species-threatening. It was just gigantic, and it was wonderful, and closed it out in a great way. But after those six books, I feel like everyone was exhausted. Oh. I was exhausted. The characters were definitely exhausted, and my readers were probably a little exhausted, too. So we all deserved a break.
Yeah.
So I decided to, write a couple of standalone, in my head, I've called them adventure novels, featuring some of the reader favorite characters from the series. And so we could just have fun for a little while.
Oh, that is, well, after saving the universe, I can see why everyone needed a break. And the neat thing is getting to explore a character that maybe wasn't front and center in the other series. So Marley, because I've read this book, but I haven't read the series yet. Tell us, where does she show up in the series prior to where we meet her in Medusa Falling?
All right. Well, she is present from the beginning, but in the first book, Starshine, she's 5 years old. Her uncle, Caleb, who she references several times in Medusa Falling, is one of the two main characters in Starshine, and in fact, in the first 9 books. So we see her in relation to him. He loves her very much, you know, and she's, of course, not surprisingly, a hugely precocious child, full of curiosity and wonder about the world and everything.
Yes.
In that respect, she never changes.
Which is a great protagonist to have her own story.
And that's definitely one of the big reasons why I chose her for her own novel. So readers do get to see her grow up over the course of the 19 books that come before this. She is not one of the main characters, but she is always present, and as she gets older, she does play a larger and larger role. So by the time we get to this point, then yes, she is ready to stand on her own.
Okay. Oh, that is so neat. And 19 books. You've been writing for a while. Am I right?
I've been writing for 10 years. Actually, the 10-year anniversary of my first book is coming up in March. I'm very excited about that.
Congratulations. That is so exciting.
Thank you. And since it was a big success, I get to write full time. So,
that is incredible.
So yeah, this is what I do.
Yes, I saw from your website that you started off with Starshine, the book you just mentioned, as the first in the series, and you mentioned the 19 books. So if you're a reader listening and you love books that just keep on and the series keeps going and you don't want it to end, apparently by book 19 you will, and you'll be ready for a standalone. But but that's so wonderful that you have this entire series that readers who may, like me, may just jump in because Medusa Falling popped up. I want to say I found it through Chirp Books and I listened to the audiobook. They can still go back and enjoy the rest of your series. And when you started writing this series, had you written other books before, or was Starshine your very first novel?
It was my very first novel. I wrote when I was young, I think most of us do, high school, college, that type of thing. Then I went to law school and became a corporate attorney. In which case I wrote a lot, but those were incredibly boring, dull words.
Very different kind of writing. Yeah.
A very different kind of writing. And honestly, kind of sapped my creative energy for a long time. I quit writing. I pretty much quit reading for fun for almost a decade. So after I left the legal profession, I came back to it and actually started writing fan fiction. For video games, and that was just for fun, just because I loved the worlds that were created.
That is so neat. And is that something you would write just on your own, or would you contribute to websites where others were writing fan fiction for the video games?
Oh, sure. There are fanfiction.net, Archive of Our Own, DeviantArt. They all post fan fictions and organize them by the IP that people are writing for and that type of thing.
So there's a whole community. A whole community there.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. And it was the comments from people who love the same video games that, you know, really encouraged me to keep going. And then it just kind of got out of control. And eventually, after about 400,000 words, I had the thought that, you know what, I could maybe do this for real. Started creating my own original, you know, independent world.
And you write as an independent author, not through a traditional press, right?
That's true. Yes, correct. I have my own publishing company.
Okay, and so
handle
you
everything
you myself. Set up your own publishing company in order to put your books out. And I love what you said. I saw this somewhere on your website, maybe in your bio, talking about you wanted the control over your stories, and that was sounded like a big piece of why you chose independent publishing. And tell us a little bit about that process, because if there's a listener out there who has a book and is thinking, you know, I don't know that any publisher would pick this up, but I feel so passionate about this story, it probably will help for them to hear what are some of the things that you did to get your first book out.
Yes, and when I started, independent publishing was really just starting to come into its own. It had been viable for a couple of years, but it was under the radar, and it was really just starting to take off. So I had to educate myself on everything at the time, all of the technicals. But now it is a huge industry. It has come so far, and so many people are publishing, so it's really easy to do at this point. So I would absolutely encourage someone today. It is, of course, you can hire the people you need to easily for editing and formatting, print and ebook, and audiobook is exploding. And so there are so many avenues available now that weren't available to me back then. There are websites and blogs and podcasts completely devoted to independent publishing, so it's easy to find out what you need, a lot easier than it was.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of audiobook, so when you decided to do an audiobook version, and let's just focus on Medusa Falling for the moment, how do you get a narrator, like someone who's going to read your book? Is that a process that you also had to navigate and learn about?
Yes. Now, Piper Down has narrated all of my audiobooks. So when Starshine became an unexpected hit, I started getting all these messages from people. You know, I want an audiobook. I need an audiobook. The thought had honestly not even occurred to me. I'm not an audiobook listener. But since it was a success, I had the, you know, resources to do that. And the production wing of Audible, which is actually owned by Amazon, is called ACX. And they hook narrators and authors up together. Narrators basically register on their website, and the audiobook production is handled through their website. So I listed Starshine, you know, for audiobook and accepted auditions from narrators that are registered on ACX. And Piper just completely blew it out of the water. There was no, you know, no comparison to the other people who had auditioned. So we contracted to do Starshine, and it was so wonderful, and she's so amazing that I have never let her go since then.
She's the narrator that I got to listen to. What a neat thing that all now 20 of your books are narrated by the same person. That is very cool.
Well, as you know, because you've listened to it, you know, her characterization is great, and the voices and accents and personalities that she's able to convey are really special. And so when you're writing a series, continuity, I think, is important
yes.
for listeners.
Yeah.
And
that,
so, you know, at this point, yeah, her voice is the voice of Marley. And if someone else was to do it in the next book, I think that would be really disjointed for listeners. So continuity is important.
Yeah. She does this incredible job of creating very unique voices for each character, because there's... Even though Marley is our main point of view character, we do get to have Galien's point of view briefly, and then other characters during dialogue are speaking. She does an incredible job of helping the reader differentiate. As I was listening, I knew who was talking, even if it didn't say, said Marley, said so-and-so. It was like, oh, I get who this is, because she has so well established each character. And let's talk a little bit about the story of Medusa Falling. You take readers on this wonderful, almost like espionage, government, shadow government, underground rebellion. It's a lot of fun. Tell us a little bit about these characters and what's going on in the Belliscosian world up until the point where Marley steps into it.
Sure. And, you know, I'm glad that you asked that, because while Marley is the main character, in many ways, this is really the Bella Scotian story.
It's about
their society, their relationships, their history, their hopes and dreams, their mistakes, you know, all of that. And what I really wanted to do here, I mean, I call it a full immersion first contact adventure. Marley is thrown into this world, and, you know, the reader and her are completely immersed in this culture, in these people. And Marley doesn't know what's going on at first, and the reader probably doesn't either, but they discover it together throughout the story. So the Bella Scotians are technologically, they're a couple of decades ahead of where we are right now, back in the real world. You know, they've got space stations all out around their solar system, and they've got cybernetics and quantum technology and hover cars and that type of thing. But of course, their history is completely different from ours and is really unique in a lot of ways. They have the ability to communicate and sense feelings and emotions amongst family members and close friends. They call them immonals, and it's resulted in a very close-knit society. Their families are very close-knit, and if they choose other people to basically welcome into their adopted family, then they enjoy that same closeness with them as well. And that impacts a lot of their choices and their society as a whole. Unfortunately, you know, that sounds all rosy and happy and everything, but they have their problems. Their government at this point is effectively controlled by a corporatist cabal they call the Irregime. It's basically, you know, it's Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos and Mark Zuckerberg and a couple of their closest friends have gotten together and decided to run things without ever being elected. And they're somewhat nefarious and everything. So about 25 years ago, they started doing genetic experimentation with newborns, and they were trying to strengthen the immonals. And unfortunately, in a small percentage of the population, resulted in a mutation in which you had children who could read minds. Read anyone's mind. It extended the immonals out far beyond their family to anyone they met on the street. And it manifested during puberty, so it took a while before they knew what had happened. And this resulted in a major convulsion in their society that ultimately led to the Dizita, is what the people with the mutations are called, led to them being imprisoned, basically, in camp. And the public was lied to about the nature of the mutation. They were told that the Dizita had gone crazy and were a danger to everyone, and so had to be isolated. And that wasn't true. The truth is they're mostly a danger to powerful people and that type of thing. And so Galien, the main Bella Scotian character, his twin sister was a Dizita, and that leads to him joining a rebel group dedicated to trying to free the Dizita and expose the truth about them.
And oh, that's kickoff of walking in with Marley.
That's where Marley enters the story.
She enters, and there is a dead body. She's meant to, like, hi, I'm the ambassador from this other world, and we're having first contact.
Hello, but, have I lost you?
Oh, can you still hear me? Did I lose her? Possibly. Let's see. We might have lost her for just a moment. We're going to see if we can get her back on the phone for these last 5 minutes. So, as she was explaining this incredible story, I hope you, the listener, was getting the feel for this just space opera, awesome, but told in such a wonderfully small story. And I say that because sometimes those big universe, you know, the universe is at stake stories can be overwhelming sometimes. And getting into a smaller, more intimate, here's what's happening with this one family on this one world is so often the type of story you can really sink your teeth into. So as Big Ed continues to try to get G.S. Jensen back on the line, I am just going to encourage you, go to her website, GSJENNSEN.com, GSJensen.com. That's two N's with an E at the end, the E-S-E-N. And this author, you are going to absolutely love her book, Medusa Falling. And then as you just dive into this Amaranthi, however, I love that she didn't mind how it was pronounced. It's however you feel like pronouncing it. You will see from her website the 19 other books that she has for you to explore this really fun adventure universe. And I think we've got you back. Are you back, GS?
I am back, yes. Sorry about that.
Let me tell you just briefly, we are having quite a storm today. So the wind gusts here in Clearwater, Florida are 50 to 60 miles, and it's, you know. Woo! So I'm not sure if that has anything to do with it, but I'm glad you're back on the line. And I just love your explanation of what's going on in this world of the Belliscosians that Marley is thrust into. And you had a great description. It's immersive first contact adventure. That's such a great way to put it. That's exactly what I felt like as I was reading this story. And I'm just curious, you mentioned video games. What type of books, authors, who are some of your great inspirations? You mentioned writing since you were a kid. Who are some of your favorite authors that you would say helped inspire? I know it's not necessarily always the same genre, but sometimes just really good writing can help shape a story. What were some of your authors and books that you enjoyed?
Peter F. Hamilton is probably my favorite science fiction author currently, okay. And probably also closest to my writing style. I also love Alistair Reynolds. I grew up reading the classics, Isaac Asimov, Arthur C. Clarke. Actually, Asimov's Foundation is what got me into sci-fi in the first place way back when I was like 13 years old.
Oh, yes. That's wonderful.
But, I also grew up reading fantasy. Elizabeth Hayden, Terry Goodkin. I loved thrillers, Robert Ludlum, Tom Clancy, all of that. I read all the time growing up.
And I love that picture of kind of the amalgamation, because your writing has that adventure side to it. There are other types of science fiction. Some of the hard sci-fi sometimes is not so much like a thriller, where your story has a lot of those thriller elements. And I will say, kind of the thing you talked about with their importance of family in this book, there are these really emotionally resonant moments, and really these characters get very vulnerable, and I just was reading thinking like, oh, I am really connecting with this alien race on this other planet in a galaxy far away, where the main character Galen really loves his sister, who has been a victim in this whole scheme, and you get such a beautiful picture of that. And isn't that one of the reasons why we can read and relate to sci-fi, even when it's a space opera set in some other world in some other galaxy, because they are human stories, for lack of a better word. They are.
No, that is, you have nailed it. That is what I have always tried to do. My stories are character driven.
Yes.
First.
Yes.
I mean, of course, there's the cool technology and the cool alien species and space exploration and all of that, but we don't really care unless we care about the characters. And
exactly.
That is always true.
Exactly. So thank you so much for coming to join us for this half hour. And what can readers do to follow you? Do you have social media? Go ahead and tell us all the places they can find you.
Sure. My website is gsjensen.com, and that's spelled with the letter G, the letter S, and then the letter J, E-N-N-S-E-N. And good news is I am exactly that everywhere on social media.
Oh, wonderful.
Facebook, yes. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram are where I'm most active, but I'm on the others as well, and I am G.S. Jensen everywhere.
Awesome. Well, listener, reader, be sure to check out her books, because they are amazing. And thank you again. We'll have to have you back on when you get a new book out.
I would absolutely love that. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And we'll talk to you again. Bye now.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Well, Big Ed, we are headed to commercial, and then we will be back with Alan Dean Foster, the sci-fi legend. I can't wait to chat with him.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Looking for inspiration? Looking for something that will intrigue you? Then this book is for you. Jim Lamb's poems start out as caterpillars, creepy, crawly, and raw. Then a miracle happens as they transform into colorful, bright, and conspicuous works of art. You can find Jim's new book of poetry, Hurting Butterflies, at Amazon.com. It's the perfect gift for the book lover in your life, even if it's you. Hurting Butterflies, the perfect holiday gift, available on Amazon. Get Hurting Butterflies.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more recording careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to Toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
Are you an author? An artist? An inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at LarsonPatentLaw.com.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is Bria, and I'm filling in for Patsy at Joy on Paper Radio. And we just had an incredible interview with G.S. Jensen, author of Medusa Falling. And we are now going to be talking to a science fiction author that, if you've been reading science fiction for any amount of time, you have heard this name, Alan Dean Foster. He will be calling in, I believe, in about 1 minute. So I am going to just give you a little bit background on the book that I just got to read by playing. We're going to have Big Ed play the science fiction book buzz. It's a review of Prodigals. Go ahead, Big Ed.
Hello, fellow sci-fi readers. This is author Bria Burton reporting for Joy on Paper with your science fiction book buzz. Today's communique to galaxies near and far includes a 2022 First Contact novel, Prodigals, by Alan Dean Foster, with stellar narration by Fred Berman. Now, let's download the book buzz. Extraterrestrial invaders make first contact and demand resources or threaten to attack major cities on Earth. Five representatives are sent to negotiate, including Devali Dev Mukherjee, a NASA consultant specializing in alien lifeforms. The requests for simple staples such as corn are easily met, and Dev is welcomed inside their alien spaceship to observe their advanced tech, such as food synthesizing equipment which delivers anything Dev requests. A variety of alien species work together on board with hundreds of automatons, but no one can tell Dev why a sudden alien emergency sends the spaceship out of the solar system with him and his companions on board. When the captain refuses to return them to Earth, Dev searches the ship for answers, and he uncovers secrets their captors have been hiding. A chance discovery leads Dev to a moral dilemma, and he's left questioning everything he knows, while the group looks to him to find a way to get them safely home. But he fears none of them will ever see Earth again. Alan Dean Foster is the acclaimed author of movie tie-ins for Star Wars, Alien, and Transformers. He was awarded the IAMTW Grandmaster Scribe Award in 2008. He is also a best-selling science fiction and fantasy author in his own right, including the popular Pip and Flinks novels and the founding of the Commonwealth series. Besides traveling, he enjoys listening to both classical music and heavy metal. This is Bria Burton with your futuristic fiction fix, signing off.
And we're back. So you got a little glimpse into Prodigals by Alan Dean Foster. And we have got him on the line. Hello, Alan.
Good morning. How are you?
Oh, good morning. I am doing wonderful. I am thrilled to talk to you. Your name is a name that I have known for a long time. And I'm so thrilled I finally got a chance to pick up one of your books. And now I can't wait to pick up a lot more of your books. But we're going to start just by talking about Prodigals before we get into a lot of the other things that you've done. So Prodigals was your most recent book release. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
And I had so much fun reading that book. The first contact with aliens starts off very much as almost like some might expect. The alien spaceship comes hovering over a certain area, and the folks who are, you know, the people they decide who are going to be the communicators get sent. And we've got Mukherjee, who is basically our protagonist here. We've got several characters, but he is the guy that we're following most closely. And his journey to essentially into space with these aliens, I just thought it's so cleverly devised, where the reader gets taken on this adventure into outer space, meeting these different aliens, and then, but the conflict is, are they ever going to make it home? At least that's the very first conflict. Can you tell us a little bit about where did this story idea come from? Where did the idea kind of start? Was it a story you just had in you for a while, or did it just kind of pop into your head one day and you sat down and wrote it and it was kind of no big thing?
Well, I'm always looking for new ideas, and it occurred to me one day when I was looking for a new idea that I had never done an alien invasion story.
Ah.
But when I start a story, I'm thinking I don't want to repeat the obvious or something that somebody else has done. Now, you
sure
can't read every book, every story in the field, so you don't know if you're repeating it, but I'm pretty sure that the idea that kind of hits about midway through the book is not one that somebody has done before. And as you described it, what you get at the beginning of the book is a fairly standard-looking alien invasion story with a few little differences and twists. And then when the reader, hopefully, has settled into what they think is going to be your usual alien invasion story, it takes a completely different tack. And then, of course, towards the end of the book, it takes a completely different tack again. So the idea was to do an alien invasion story that was different and try to surprise the reader not once, but twice. I hope the book pulls that off.
The twists and turns, yes, I was surprised. I was that reader. I was your target. I thought, we're going this direction, aren't we? Oh, no, we're not. We're going a totally different direction. And I had to start sharing with people, like, you need to read this book. Like, I need to talk to some people about what's going on here. And one of the things that I really enjoy is kind of that even just the exploration of the ship. They get into this ship, and there is essentially, you get the idea there's this endless supply of what they need. So they can kind of tap the ship and say, hey, I need a cheeseburger, and they can get it. And so that, I thought that was such an intriguing idea, because that begs so many questions. But these characters are essentially, they're kind of like political prisoners, almost. Like they're kind of treated well, but they're not really wanting to be there, so they don't get to ask all the questions that you would ask if you were on this exploration with the aliens, not as a unwitting, you know, passenger that wasn't planning to be on this journey. So there is this very clever way that you bring about some of the tech and what, for example, what would you have asked for if you were on that ship?
An explanation of why I was on that ship.
But, yeah.
But that's what I would have asked for, but the answer you wouldn't get a straight answer because of the way the plot develops. There would be obfuscation and avoidance, and the people, the aliens who are holding you, wouldn't give you a straight answer. We find out why, of course, later on in the story. But if you're talking about food or general things like that, I probably would have been different than everybody else. And you start exploring. If you have tech, you're talking about the tech. A lot of science fiction doesn't pay attention to the details of tech. It's like, would you ask for a toothbrush when there's a better way of taking care of your teeth? Now, you don't have time to go into all that exposition in a standard novel, but I'm always thinking about it, because if the subject comes up in the story, you have to be prepared to explain it in a logical and rational way. And that's the problem with a lot of science fiction. People, particularly film science fiction, Nobody pays any attention to the small details. And I'm very big on small details. If you went back to, say you were making a trans-Pacific journey in the early 19th century on a whaler, the tech would be very different. And what you might expect and what you might have to actually use would be extremely different. And a lot of the things that you would accept as ordinary and standard in your everyday life wouldn't even exist. So you'd have to learn how to cope. And then the reverse is true. You would have, in the book, in that kind of a situation, access to tech that we don't have now. It would be a learning process. But I love paying attention to the little details without going on and on about it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you do it so beautifully in this book. And the ethical dilemmas that come up, I mean, those things where they're between the five characters, they're debating. Now, should we do this? Should we do that? And one of the characters in particular has this idea of maybe a way to make some money through all of this when all said and done. And the group has this incredible debate where most of them are not on board with this one character's idea. And then our protagonist, Mukherjee, is kind of tossed back and forth, kind of not sure what he thinks. And he's trying to figure it out. And so in many ways, it seems like stories like the one you're telling, it's this wonderful adventure into the unknown with these aliens, but then ethical dilemmas arise, and there's this the turn and twist that you were just talking about, the twist and turn. Suddenly we're kind of refocused and laser focused on a very human question. Is this right or is this wrong? What thoughts were you having as you were writing some of those scenes where there's this great debate going on between these characters? Alan, I think we lost you for just a second. Are you still there? I can hear you now. So go ahead and start over that answer. Yeah. We missed the answer.
If all your characters act and believe the same thing, agree on how to do everything, but then how they
we're having a little bit of signal interference. And Alan, I'm not sure if you're in a stationary place or if
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I can hear you now. I can hear you now.
Okay.
Now we'll it's clear as a bell. Go right ahead. So sorry, we missed the majority of that answer.
No, that's all right. This has been a lot of heavy weather out here, getting a lot of heavy weather back where you are.
And
the signals aren't perfect, and there's a story there.
There is a story there. This is this is all part of it.
From? you might have an important general somewhere trying to divert something on a battlefield, and the signal keeps getting interrupted, and you only get certain words from the people at the front line, completely changes the thrust of battle. So there's a story there, too, just real quick. But the people in the book, they're different people, they're different ages, they come from different backgrounds, and they're not all going to think the same way. And very often, when you meet people, you think you have them figured out. But when something significant happens in your life or their lives or in the world around you, they may act in a very different way from what you anticipate. And when you do that in story, then you make the reader sit up a little bit and say, oh, wait a minute, I didn't think that Bill there was going to do that. Why did he do that? And then, of course, you have to explain why Bill did whatever he did. But you get character development. Otherwise, it's very boring both for the writer and the reader. So when I was putting all these characters together in different situations, as you would do in any good story, you have to, you have to show they're going to react in different ways and maybe in ways that you don't expect.
And I love that explanation, because even as we were having technical difficulties, you were finding a story in there, and you had a character in your mind appear. The general is off doing something, and that I hope the writers who are listening are paying attention, because we, those of us who love to write, we can find stories wherever we are, and if we just observe a little bit, if we look around, if we notice what's happening, even with the technology that we currently have, and all sorts of types of stories can be told, and then you grab a character, and you make that character the one who's the story, you know, is taking place with a character, and suddenly you can take off with your own book, and you have been taking off with books since the 70s. Is that right? You started your first novels were back in the early 70s or prior to that?
No, that's correct.
Correct. Okay. 70s. And you have such a catalog. So for those who want to explore more of your writing beyond just your most recent release, Prodigals, which I would say, reader, get out there, grab it. It's a great book. You also have multiple best-selling series out there, including some other standalones. And I couldn't help myself. I am currently, I know you can't see me, but for those who are watching on YouTube, I am wearing a Star Wars shirt. And I couldn't talk to you without mentioning that I personally love the original trilogy of Star Wars. My dad is the one who brought Star Wars into our home, and I grew up watching it on a projector. My dad had a projector that he would project onto our wall when I was a kid. And oh, somehow there's a theme of music playing right now. And of course, talking to you, I had to ask about some of the Star Wars novelizations that you've been a part of. I have, now that I've read Prodigals, I have picked up Splinter of the Mind's Eye and just started reading it. I am already hooked. I cannot wait to read more of these. Tell us a little bit, you have been in the science fiction world for a long time. Tell us a little bit about what it was like back then. You got to talk to George Lucas about his vision for Star Wars before it even went beyond the first movie, and that's where Splinter of the Mind's Eye came in, correct?
Well, yes and no. George's idea was that if the first film was not a big success, or a complete failure, he would be able to do a sequel film on a low budget. And he wanted to have something available, not only as the basis for a low-budget film, but to feed the hoped-for desire of incipient Star Wars fans.
Mm.
So when I signed the contract, it was for two books. It was the novelization of the film and then a sequel novel. And the only restriction that was put on me to coming up with the story for the sequel novel was that it could be filmed on a low budget. That's why I set it on a fog-shrouded planet, and a lot of it takes place underground. It would cut down on the need for expensive backgrounds. There was, of course, no CGI back then. Everything was physical. And I was given pretty much a free hand with Splinter of the Mind's Eye, with that one exception, and also the fact that I could not use the character of Han Solo because Harrison Ford had not come aboard for any sequel projects. And no Han Solo sort of meant to me no Chewbacca, although this has all changed subsequently in so many ways. But at the time, That's the way it was. So the book features Luke and Leia, a bunch of other characters that I conjured, and an appearance by Darth Vader, who we don't know who is, because I was writing Splinter of the Mind's Eye before the film was released.
You did not know personally at the time either, correct? That he was, well, spoiler, everybody, he's Luke's father. So you were not aware of that as you're writing your book?
No. There were a number of things that had not been solidified in the Star Wars, what was to become the Star Wars universe. There's no Star Wars universe with the first film and the first sequel book.
Correct.
There's just a film. So I didn't have any background material for anything that was presumed to happen 20 years in the future.
Sure.
And that was how I was, that's how I was able to write what I was able to write. As far as Darth Vader being Luke's father, everybody has their opinions about something like Star Wars that has become such a part of our culture, and hindsight is a wonderful writing tool, and people would go back, and people have gone back and rewritten things more to their own personal liking. But that's good. It's like somebody giving you a big Lego set and with no instructions, and you build whatever you want instead of trying to follow some kind of a preset book of instructions. And that's what I did with Splinter of the Mind's Eye.
And it's a wonderful thing. I have a 5-year-old, a 6-year-old now. He's 6, and he loves Star Wars. I cannot wait to. He's seen the movies, the original 3, and I can't wait to introduce him to some of these books. And I'm thrilled that I could one day hand him your book and say, "Hey, read this. You're gonna love it." And tell us a little bit about some of your other series. You have so many novels. What do you have, any favorites you would love the readers to be aware of? Do you have any you're currently working on that you can share with us?
Well, there are two novels that are not yet out. One is called Secretions, which is part of my Commonwealth Universe series. And I wanted to write a book that, bearing in mind what I said earlier about paying attention to the technical details, I wanted to create a world where the life forms were essentially based on slime. That may not sound very attractive, but hopefully it reads differently. And there's a fantasy novel called Hymner the Bear. I just felt one day like I'm going to have some fun here. And it's a fairly standard, at least standard by my the approaches I take, fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. So there are those. There's a short horror novel coming out, Lovecraftian horror novel for people who know H.P. Lovecraft,
mm-hmm.
called Moaning Words, which will be out from a small press later this year. And as far as things that I would like people to read, I have a particular fondness for an early book called Midworld. And when people ask, as they do, what should I read of yours if I've never read anything of yours?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I often recommend one of my short story collections. There are a bunch out there. And I figure if you don't like this story, maybe you'll like the next story. And some of them are science fiction and some of them are fantasy. But there's a variety there. And I always think if you're preparing to encounter a new author you haven't read before, and they do write short stories, that's a really good way to get an introduction to them. Because
oh, absolutely, yes.
To quote a certain film,
And I'm so sorry, Alan, we're losing you once again.
Okay.
Oh, I think I hear you again. Okay, go ahead.
It's the saying that if you like one story, maybe you like the next one.
Yes.
It's a good way to find out. I always felt it was sad that one of our earlier writers, whether it was
And I think we've lost you again, but I heard a little bit of what you were saying. Focusing on some of the short stories can help introduce the writing style and can get people into your books. And then you mentioned Midworld from the Commonwealth series as a great starting point. That book that kicks off the Human X Commonwealth series is a great starting point. And we are just about out of time. So, Alan, where can people go to follow you on social media to find out what's happening in your world?
I have a very cool website full of information.
And I'm gonna say the name of the website because for some reason this robotic sounding thing is persistent. The general is out there doing what he's doing. Okay, so the website fantasticfiction.com. That's yours, correct?
No, that's not my website.
Oh, that's not your website. That's okay.
Mine is don'tbeshot@alanfoster.com.
Alan. Let me get back to Alan Dean Foster. Okay, so people can follow you at your name, alandeanfoster.com.
It's a good place for researching stories, publications, and other information. Where I post frequently is, well, there's a Facebook fan page that one of the publishers and I maintain.
Okay, Facebook is a great place to follow you. So I follow you there. It's the Facebook fan page, right? Okay, yep. So if you're on Facebook, you can follow Alan Dean Foster right there. And thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you coming on to Joy on Paper and just giving us a little piece of some of the things that you've been a part of. It's such an honor to talk to you. And I'm so sorry that the machine is trying to block us, but there is a story there for sure. So thank you, Alan. I appreciate you coming on, and we'll have to talk again soon when your next book comes out. We'd love to have you back. All right. Bye-bye now. Okay. So, oh, what an incredible author. Talking to Alan Dean Foster, he is a wealth of knowledge in the sci-fi realm. There are very few sci-fi fans who are not well aware of his books, of what he's been a part of. He's done novelizations for the Alien franchise, for Star Trek, for Star Wars. So, what a privilege to get to talk to him. And so, if you are a writer, I hope you will get out there and get writing. I hope this show has encouraged you. Our science fiction themed show for today has encouraged you to look around, observe, see what might not look quite right. There could be a story there. And for those who are readers, we've got some wonderful books to recommend to you. Alan Dean Foster's Prodigals and G.S. Jensen's Medusa Falling. So Patsy will be back for her regular Joy on Paper this Thursday. So we look forward to chatting with you again soon. And there will be another science fiction themed show in the coming days. So I will keep you posted. If you want to follow me at www.briaburton.com, I am on Facebook as Bria Burton, and I have a writer page that you can follow. And I'm also on Twitter/X, whatever it's called these days. And you can find me at Bria Burton. And I'm also on Instagram. So thank you, dear listeners, for joining us for this incredible show. And we will talk to you again soon. Bye-bye now.